Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hello and welcome to the show with me, Gillian Gotzel. Today, my guest is Nick Almond, who is the CEO and co-founder of Finance.Vote. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hi, Gillian. Thanks for having me along.
So we're just saying before we start, you've got kind of an unusual background. In academia, you have all the prerequisites. You've got physics and biophysics and also whatever. And then you jump into philosophy and you got a PhD, and then you're working for the London College of Fashion. So how does someone go from a very physicky, you know, that's kind of very serious stuff into fashion? So do you want to just explain your degrees, of which there are many, and your academic life, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been a very windy path. I came in through physics. So I did about 10 years of physics. So I did undergraduates, masters. I got very interested in the kind of physics of life. So like what are the physical systems that impact upon biological systems? And that led me into doing a PhD in a kind of subfield called surface science, which is...
What is that?
It's part of condensed matter science. So it turns out that kind of most interesting stuff happens at surfaces. And finding out how things happen at surfaces is a kind of experimental problem. So... we invented different kinds of analytical techniques for understanding what happens at surfaces, and in particular, biological things. So my PhD ended up trying to understand how DNA ordered itself in a kind of attempt to understand how life started. So DNA kind of self-ordered, and, you know, the kind of primordial soup, why do biological molecules order up and all that sort of stuff. And I ended up working on a technique which essentially was like a spectroscopy technique. You fire light at a surface, see how it reflects, and then you can, from that, infer how biological molecules ordered on it. And yeah, I absolutely loved it, but I kind of realized that I didn't really have the disposition of an experimental physicist. You have to have a kind of incredible level of methodological rigor. So you need perfect logbooks. You need to be willing to run the same experiment over and over and over again. So I had these incredibly complex experiments that would take a week to wind up and wind down, ultra high vacuums. And yeah, I just lived in a lab for about 2 years. And in the meantime, I run my PhD right to the very end. My funding ran out. I was trying to solve, you know, like an incredibly complex problem, chasing down the rabbit hole. And yeah, just totally ran out of money. So I ended up doing lots of teaching. So I tutored kids. I did lots of undergraduate teaching. And that's kind of what I fell in love with, is helping other people explain. I kind of got kind of obsessed on thinking, well, I might not be one of these guys, but what we need is more of these people. So I got really interested in education as a sort of concept. So I ended up working in science outreach for a couple of years, and I worked in the Astrophysics Research Institute at John Moores, where we'd kind of rent out
telescopes. What's astrophysics as opposed to surface space physics and physics? That's stars?
Astrophysics, yeah. So that's kind of understanding the universe. That's understanding celestial bodies, understanding cosmology. It's everything from black holes to planetary science, all that kind of stuff. And we used that as a sort of route into getting kids excited about science. So I would take, you know, vats of liquid nitrogen to schools and explain black holes to kids and all that sort of stuff. And that was really fun. But I ended up wanting to sort of get a lectureship and start moving my way through academia. So I ended up taking a job as a mathematics lecturer, which is where my first course was number theory. It's what got me into cryptography, because that's the kind of offshoot. And I actually discovered Bitcoin very, very early on, sort of in 2010, 11.
Did you invest in Bitcoin early on?
I didn't. I kick myself about it every day, but I discovered Bitcoin when you could only mine it. And I discovered some of the very early articles. And I was looking for a reason to, you know, my sort of students were really struggling with understanding why number theory was worth learning. And cryptography was an application of it in the real world. And I said, look, you can do money with it. This is going to change the world. And then kind of forgot about it for years. But in that sort of period, I ended up teaching maths teachers, training maths teachers, and ended up trending into learning theory as a sort of science and a sort of art and science, really. And I kind of, as quite a young academic, started moving up through the management tiers and ended up, mainly because no one else wanted to do it, but I ended up running a load of master's courses in education. And that's where I started teaching learning theory, leadership management skills for headmasters and teachers, and from the sort of theoretical side of things. And in that sort of period, I started working very closely with the kind of upper management, pro vice chancellors there, to build governance systems that would help. You're starting to see the link now.
Yes, I'm following the path, the trail of problems. I'm starting to understand.
So, yeah, I mean, so universities are a bit like decentralized organizations because no one likes being told what to do. And academics like herding cats, right? They don't like being told what to do. They all do different stuff. And it was kind of my job to start helping them understand their own teaching practice and figure out how to learn from each other, to better learn how to deliver their discipline to the students. So sort of learning teaching basically is the bucket of stuff. And I ended up as director of learning and teaching at Liverpool University, at Hope University. And we built this kind of system we called a network of communities of practice, which is a governance system for harvesting collective intelligence from everyone. So we'd all get into rooms together and do domain-specific, subject-specific meetings. And then we built the structure for linking it to the kind of key decision-making systems in the university. And that was really successful. We ended up getting a kind of commendation from the higher education governing bodies for that. And out of the blue, I'd been there for about 7 or 8 years, and I started to feel like I fancied a change. I'd been in Liverpool for 17 years. And the London College of Fashion rang me up, or a headhunter rather, rang me up and said, would you be interested in applying for a job at the London College of Fashion? And obviously I would have never have thought of doing this, and like just off my own back, but I thought, yeah, why not? And I went down there and explained sort of my approach for organizational development. They were quite excited about it. And yeah, and I ended up getting the job and became an associate dean at the London College of Fashion, which is one of the most interesting 3 years of my life.
Did you have to dress in a particular way? Did you have to?
You know what? I started that job dressed up, you know, and I got the best suit I could find. And like I got there and everyone just wears trainers and whatever they want. And you find out the fashionable people, just they're fashionable by not trying. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
By the end, everyone's just wearing their sort of whatever they want. And, you know, some people are just really eccentric and interesting people and fascinating place. And that's, it really got me into the University Arts London, such a wonderful institution. Just absolute chaos in many ways, because they're trying to, so from a governance perspective, it was even more interesting.
I was going to say, it sounds even crazy because you know about professors and science and stuff, but when you're in fashion.
Yeah. So scientists do what they're told, sort of, because they like their order. Artists don't like order. They like absolute chaos. And that made for a really, really interesting working environment. But for about 4 or 5 years, since I got really into this governance sort of research, I became aware of the DAO and
the decentralized autonomous organization.
That's right. Yeah. So the Ethereum had this really interesting event where someone had created something called a decentralized autonomous organization. And it's essentially a organizational structure, but for the internet. And it uses cryptocurrency and smart contracts to promote a kind of open internet collaboration space where you could pool money, decide how it's spent. And once this sort of clicked into my mind, I just couldn't stop thinking about it. It keeps keeping me awake for at night for years.
That's mad. So DAOs are keeping you awake at night.
Oh, they have done for about 5 years now. Even more
you
so.
You must be in the minority, I suspect.
I suspect so. Well, even starting to become less so. So, you know, there was a very, very small group of even within the crypto space of people interested in these, in this sort of primitive, in this idea. But for someone who's fascinated by organization and social consensus, this was, I could see, or I'm still very, very convinced this is going to really change the world. It's allows us to collaborate on the internet and allows us to do organizations digitally in spaces where we can minimize trust and collaborate. And I kind of realized that the part of the solution for this was voting technology. Because the people in these organizations might not be, you know, they're not identifiable people, they're pseudonymous actors, they might be just an address. And that changes the game quite a lot. And then there's crypto assets involved, and that changes things. So I've just been thinking for a long time about what are the, you know, what are the organizational components of these new digital organizations? And that's what we've been building at Finance.Vote, these kind of modular.
So I'm going to stop you there before you even explain what Finance.Vote is. So yeah. Your path has been very interesting, right? I've met a man who's been spending nights awake thinking about DAOs. I think you're the first man that I've met, a person who said they spent 5 years awake thinking about that. But actually, I think you're right, because it is. It's really not to stay awake at night necessarily, but it's really fascinating. And I love how you've compared the university to a form of embryonic decentralized structure anyway, because of the personalities and what's happening. Okay, so you've got all this, and you're also, you're a scientist at heart too as well. So you like to put things in order, you know, even though you like to, you might be a trendy person now wearing gym shoes and tracksuits and jackets, whatever, I don't know, whatever you're wearing in college. So Finance.Vote, what are you looking at? What is the I'm like, I get where you're coming from, but what are you encapsulating in Finance.Vote?
So we have kind of, if you look at the kind of how conventional organizations work, particularly now in the kind of software that they use, a lot of them use things like the Google Apps ecosystem or Office 365. So they use document storage, document platforms, spreadsheets, databases, all that sort of stuff. And we're trying to essentially build what we call the DAO suite. It's like the Google Apps suite, but for DAOs. So these different bits of apps, but in our case, they're decentralized apps or dApps that do those bits and pieces that organizations need to bring themselves into reality and run as functional, well-running organizations. So it's like a toolkit for decentralized organizations. And it's our belief that these are going to be very different, just like organizations can be, you know, basically anything. DAOs will be the same. And there'll be some that are very creative, some that are very technological and technical, decentralized finance facing. And increasingly some will be like for NFTs and digital art and music and things like that. So what we're aiming to do is build a DAO that builds DAOs.
Okay, so we've DAO got this DAOs. Kind of
a DAO of DAOs, yeah. So, we've got this, we're trying to build our own organization. And this is a kind of leadership practice that I picked up over the years, is the way that you get people to follow you is by do it yourself. So our DAO is the first to use all the applications, and we build them with the community. So we get their feedback, we vote on it, they lead our priorities, we hire people from the community to build them with us. And we're just getting to the point where we've got the kind of first iteration of our toolbox, and now getting other DAOs to start to use them. And it's been an interesting time. 6 to 8 months ago, no one really cared about DAOs, but all of a sudden, people are getting very, very excited about it.
So how important is like the voting aspect? Because most organizations maybe there's hierarchies, maybe there's a bit of push, a bit of lobbying. You know, you think about this, or you vote on maybe, you know, like elections, but not on where the canteen gets nice coffee or not, you know. So how do you, how important is voting?
For me, it's the, and there's some debate about this in the space, because there is challenges with it. Many of which we're trying to sort of tackle head on. But if you think about an organization, how it's different, you normally have this kind of pyramidic structure. There's a hierarchy of super senior people down in kind of layers of management and departmental structures, and the kind of, it's a kind of pyramid. And that generally isn't the case in DAOs. They're much flatter organizations. They're much closer to democracies than they are hierarchies. The way that you can turn, where you would normally have a face-to-face conversation, you can turn dialogue into numbers with voting technology. And numbers are what blockchains are good at. So it kind of collapses human complexity and all the messiness into a nice reducible data set that can be stored on a blockchain. So it's a way of reducing all the human dynamics into a stream of numbers.
Can that be too simplistic sometimes? Is it too binary? Are decisions binary?
It can be. And that's actually, so we're using a special kind of voting system that called quadratic voting.
Yes, I've come to that. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, so this is, the way that we phrase democracy at the moment has this binary thing, you know, are you left or right, Labour or Conservative, Democrat or Republican, and it's quite divisive. Right, it leads to binary thinking, it leads to extremism. And I've been utterly fascinated with this idea of how voting systems could be better that promote more nuance. Mm. And we think quadratic voting does that.
Would you explain that for people listening and for me? Because I knew once upon a time, I can't remember.
Yeah, so this is one of these fringe things that just like DAOs, I think this is even more fringe than DAOs. And it's the idea that it was invented by some economists, actually, called Glenn Whale and Eric Posner. And they wrote a book called Radical Markets. And it's, as one of the ideas in that book is quadratic voting. And it's the idea that there's a few iterations of it, and we've made our own. The simplest version is that instead of one person, one vote, you can have more votes than one if you buy them. So you can buy, let's say, 5 votes, but instead of $5, if it was $1 each, it's $25. It goes exponential the more you buy. So if you buy 10 votes, it's $100. And if you buy 1,000 votes, it's $1,000,000. And that it's there to stop people with lots of money controlling the democratic process.
Okay, so you have to have money to buy more votes, but you cannot buy, it's not one for one.
But it kind of smooths out the effect of the super rich controlling it, which they kind of already do in the real world with, you know, super PACs and lobbying and so on. But we kind of don't really use that system again, because, I mean, in the crypto space, it's done on coins. So there's kind of one coin, one vote is the kind of dominant voting paradigm at the moment. And that again means that people with millions of dollars, the kind of whales, if you like, control the democracies, control the voting. So there's another version of quadratic voting called modified quadratic voting, which gives you everyone a budget of voice credits. So everyone has 100 credits and they can spend it on a number of items. So the example that's used in the original literature is, imagine a democratic system with lots of sequential referenda. So in this world, we don't have a vote once every 4 years. We have them many times a year. And we'll have a vote on healthcare and a vote on education.
Like direct democracy?
Like a direct democracy, but it's kind of, it's just it's an idea that you could go back to the populace and ask them more often about certain issues.
And well, actually, in Ireland, we would use a referendum quite a lot. Now, not, but we do, and we have a citizens assembly here, but we have had quite a few referendum where, first of all, the government, if it's a hot potato, put into the citizens assembly, and then it comes out, and then we have a referendum. So especially on tricky things like life choices and, you know, other things that are not straightforward.
Exactly. And that, so that's a great way to tackle sort of the voices of minority participants, right? So there's a sort of phenomenon called the tyranny of the majority. So there might be minorities who are outweighed from the majority, and consequently in a kind of majority vote don't ever get represented because they're a minority and don't have the vote power for it. Whereas this system allows those people to weight their votes more readily on those policies. So it's designed to bring out minority voices in a system to give the person with minority viewpoints a louder voice.
We also have proportional representation here in Ireland, which is also designed to protect or enhance minority views.
Yes, it's kind of one of the biggest issues in democracy. And I'd certainly believe that this potential voting idea has the potential to play into that. So the idea is that you have, you know, each user or each participant has a set of voting credits that they can spend on issues that they care about. And we've developed an application that does this called influence.vote. And what it does is you end up sorting a list of things that you care about. So once you've voted and used your voice credits up, you've essentially created a preference list. So here's 10 things we could do. And what you end up doing is creating the 10 things that you want to do.
That's interesting.
And when we add them all together, we get the preferences of the collective. And we think that's a really powerful mechanism for doing decentralized governance and potentially, you know, real world governance in the future.
No, that is interesting. Because I always think the first past the post is a very, very harsh environment. You know, because you often hear, especially in the UK, when you have elections and then parties aren't represented, they have had thousands of votes. They're just not there in the parliament because they haven't got past the post. And I'm going, whoa, that must disenfranchise so many people who put their vote.
Indeed, yeah. And there's quite a lot of the current democratic system that's quite old and dusty. We've been using the same processes for a long time, and it's, you know, I can't see us going to a polling booth in 50 years and using a pencil and paper still. Just, you know, we're going through this global digital transformation, and I just can't imagine that we'll end up, you know, still doing things.
The only thing I will say, I ran in the 2014 European parliamentary elections here in Ireland, and it's a paper-based system. I went into Cork for a couple of hours in the county centre to see, because it was in Ireland South. 3 days later, I was peeled out of there. I only went in for a couple of hours. When you use pen and paper and people counting, it is so exciting.
Yeah,
there's like one button, and let's do a recount. They've got to get the things out, and they're counting, and the tallies are there, and they're calling the stuff, and it's not meant to be a spectator sport,
it is,
but it is just certain things are kind of funny. Anyway, sorry, that's a digression. This is really interesting what you're doing. You're looking at voting, looking at governance. Tell me about signaling. What's that about?
So signaling is the idea that, so let's say we've got, so there's this, you know, idea that there's wisdom of the crowds, right? Which is that if you average everyone's insight onto something, you end up with some kind of signal coming from the crowd that might be interesting or more accurate than if you just asked a small number of people or done some kind of other measurement technique. I'm kind of not 100% convinced about that. Crowds aren't generally wise, actually. But what there is the potential to do is to filter out the signal from the noise. So signaling it's a term used in the crypto space quite a lot. These are non-binding votes. It's just that we all go and use our application to signal our interests, signal our preferences. And that can be used by the developers, for example, to inform their decision-making. So signaling tools are the kind of first step in decentralized organization. Find out what everyone wants to do. And then there's always going to be this asymmetry of people who can write code and do the really technical stuff. But if they're informed by the crowd, it brings in a lot more people as participants.
Into Are they more accurate than polls? Going back, do you know how polls in recent elections here across the pond have been dramatically wrong? But it's signaling, Is it just, it's just a way of getting a flavor, perhaps a snapshot?
It's signaling polling or very, very similar concepts. Yeah. So we actually did an experiment during the London mayoral elections where we used our quadratic voting tool. I was just really curious to see. It was very, we just finished building it that week and thought, right, let's go and see if we can find some Londoners. And essentially it works by, we use an NFT, so a non-fungible token, as a voting ID. So we put a call out through various channels around London and found some people who are Londoners and understand crypto enough to be able to receive an NFT. And then that gave them a quadratic vote. And instead of kind of like, here are the candidates, it was here are the issues. And, you know, it had transport, climate change, policing, housing, immigration, lockdowns, all that sort of stuff. And what we collected was then a sorted list of what people actually cared about, which might be a signal to what candidate they should vote for. And we also collected a lot of qualitative data. So when you vote six on climate change, you can say why. And we get this really rich data set of votes and dialogue related to particular issues. And I mean, I taught research methods for many years during my time as an academic, and collecting that kind of mixed methods data set is really expensive and challenging normally. And we managed to collect near enough 100 results on this in a day. And that was just really, really, really interesting. So as a polling tool, these kind of things can be really, really useful. And we're keen to sort of find other ways of getting a lot more participants in. And we found a better way to distribute these NFTs now. We could potentially set a vote up for 100 million people now using a blockchain. I think that's potentially really exciting.
I'm just thinking, because I mentioned earlier about having the referendums or whatever you call them here in Ireland, but it's expensive.
Yeah.
Very expensive to find out what people think.
I think an election costs 60 million pounds or thereabouts to set up. So if we
this crack would be a lot better, even to get, so I mean, sometimes governments are afraid to act because they're worried it's a contentious issue, right? They go the wrong way, moving out of thing. But if they could get the signaling from the people, which way they would go, it would make them, they would represent the people better, but B, it would also give them courage perhaps to take a course of action.
Absolutely. So, you know, if you're going to follow the will of the people, you need to know what the will of the people is.
Yeah, and not every 4 years.
Absolutely. And you will find that the polling, so there's a few big polling companies like YouGov, Ipsos Mori and the like. And, you know, there's no guarantee that they're bias-free. And creating the original questions that you ask to people is normally where the bias creeps in, the way you ask the question. And ours is just a list of hashtags. And actually the participants can add their own tags. And there is no questions. It's just discussion points or issues or essentially just hashtags that people are talking about. And it removes the question creator out of the picture, if you like.
Clever. So I've been asking questions about governments and politics, but actually the DAO is much more applicable, well, not say much more, but organizations. Yes. And so let's go back. Sorry, my interest in politics dragged me out. Let's go back into organizations. So what type of organizations would use your services, do you think?
So we've probably already within the crypto space. So there's a few different kinds of organizations, if you like, at the moment, that we're kind of actively targeting. One is DeFi organizations. So these are projects that are trying to create new financial primitives using blockchains. So things that, you know, buying and lending markets, borrowing lending markets, what's called liquidity mining solutions and ways of handling crypto assets, things that traditional financial companies might do. So financial services, people are building these things in a decentralized way. Now, this is disintermediating or kind of removing the banks out of the picture. But what does it replace it with? Kind of replaces it with some smart contract developers. If it's completely decentralized and doesn't need any input, they can deploy it and walk away. But quite often they need upgrading and responding and agility in the market. And that means they need decision making. And that's where DAOs will come in. That you're essentially replacing these people in, you know, in the banking sector with the people, with decentralized participants. And so DAOs are a big target there. The other is the NFT space. So we've just seen a huge boom in people releasing kind of series of digital art. And people are buying these digital art pieces, and some of them go, you know, they're 1000xing in price. But the really sustainable ones, the ones that hold their value, are ones that build a community. So we've, our voting tools work really nicely with NFTs. That's the way we built them, as a kind of voter ID system. And so NFT projects can essentially use their digital art pieces as voter IDs and then pool some money and decide how to build a community and a sort of art collective out of that. So we see those as the two major targets for our DAOs to start with. But really there's all sorts of things popping up: writers DAOs, music DAOs, people organizing parties, all sorts of stuff. It's
fancy dress, cocktails.
Exactly.
Beer and cocktail wine, DAO. Wine That's and cheese.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me also, you have, I was going through your paper and stuff, but also you cornered the dot vote extensions. So
yeah,
you've got bank, yield, auction, influence, you know, finance. So finance is the DeFi space you're looking at. So
yes.
are you trying to look at every sector, or you're thinking about different sectors where the vote might be used?
Yeah, governance? So I mean, we're following this kind of like idea. It's just like a plain way of describing what it is. Mm-hmm. So kind of dates back to this governance idea from when I was in the universities, where, you know, we'd have a community that was focused on, let's say, assessment or educational technology, right? So that was the name of what it does. So it tries to be the most sort of plain semantic sort of tag for what that is. So finance.vote is the kind of, at the moment, is the kind of umbrella DAO structure that's kind of, it's finance, it's all about crypto assets, whether it's NFTs or DeFi. At the moment, most things are falling within that bucket. But underneath that, the different dot votes may have a life of their own, but are part of our DAP suite. So influence, for example, might exist outside of that. And maybe a YouTuber wants to turn their feed into a DAO, and they can use that and have nothing to do with the finance bit at all. But yeah, we've got a set of applications that all do a very different bit that's part of the sort of DAO thing. And it's mostly about bootstrapping a new economy, a new digital economy into existence. So we've got an app called Bank, which is about issuing assets out to large groups of people. It's a bit like decentralized payroll.
Okay.
So some DAOs have $1 billion treasury, more in some cases, and they're struggling to figure out how to spend it. So they've got $1 billion. And I'm sure they're stuck with kind of poor voting mechanisms and poor proposal systems, and just the difficulty of sending it out to all these people. So what this does is we could pay 1 million people with this thing, with network native currencies. So people will be able to do small jobs for DAOs, you know, go and tweet about us, go and talk about us, go and do these little small tasks. And using this app, we could pay up to 1 million people with it. And it also locks tokens up, so people can't dump them into the market. Then we've got a project called Auction, which is about issuing new assets. So one of the major issues in kind of issuing new crypto assets is, at what do you list the price? If you list it too high, you've overvalued the project. And then it just kind of like goes down for months at a time until it finds its real value. And this uses a kind of auction mechanism we've designed to issue both new tokens and NFTs. So we think DAOs are going to want to create their own economy, but also issue new tokens and collect. So there's some DAOs out there that are collecting art as digital assets, and then eventually they're going to want to sell that to realize some profits. So that's what that application's there for. And then we've got a kind of prediction market called Markets. So very esoteric one, that one, but we think some DAOs are going to want to do something called Futarchy, which is using prediction markets to for governance.
Foo is from future, is it?
Yes. Futarchy. Yeah. So it's like, it's the idea that you can essentially make bets on how good a decision is. So let's say we make this decision, let's have a betting market on whether it is a good one or not. And you'll see it kind of aggregates collective intelligence using market dynamics, which is super weird, but we're going to start experimenting with that in the next year or two. And then we've got a project called Yield, which is about building a decentralized market. So there's now these things called decentralized exchanges, which are removing these place trading venues out of the game. So you can now swap crypto assets without places like Coinbase and Binance, yeah, that are typically these gated sort of institutions and control who can trade what, whereas DEXs are open, but they need market making, and that's what that application does. And then we've got this governance suite, which is where we get really excited, which is how we do all of our consensus building and decision making systems. So each of these apps and dot vote domains are part of a network, and eventually we want them all run by the crowd. So each one of these things will have their own DAO, called the mini DAOs, and the community takes them over and runs them.
Wow. So where are you on your roadmap? Where are you funding? Are you beta? Are you live? What are you doing?
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. I can see why your brain is engaged. You're probably still.
Yes. We haven't slept much for the last year. We've made 5 applications that are all at their kind of version one release, and all of them have got users, and we're about to start on-ramping new DAOs. So we've tested them within our own DAO, had our users play with them, break them, battle test them. And now we're very comfortable that we can go and start on-ramping new organizations to these things. So then we've got about 5 to 7 more in the roadmap that we plan to build over the next 18 months or so. But at the moment, we're kind of just like, let's freeze at this point. We're already confusing people. Everyone's boggled by what we're up to. Some people are starting to get it now. So we funded last year. We actually used the DeFi space to manage our treasury and managed to have a year-long burn and be almost exactly where we started with on what we raised, because we yield farm. So we use our treasury to use the actual DeFi space itself. We're doing pretty well. We are considering going out to a kind of Series A raise in the next 6 months, where we'll potentially look for some venture capital backing to kind of really kick us up to the next level. We've done incredibly well with quite a tight budget, but we've got very ambitious plans where we want to take this. So it's quite likely we're going to want to raise a bit more money in the future and go out with that.
Okay, my head hurts. I can see why the mind boggles. You know, you're kind of grabbing. Yeah. Or maybe. So, if people want to find you, Nick, where's the best place to get in contact? Look what you're doing. See if they want to chat to you about, you know, cooperations, partnerships. Just chat generally.
Yeah, sure. So I spend far too much time on Twitter, and my handle is at Dr. Nick A. And then our project handle is finance.vote with the words DOT in the middle. And the same as our Telegram, where you can get into our Discord. And that's where you can actually get involved in the project. So you can both watch what we're doing, but also directly come and work with us and build it together with us.
That's exciting. There's an invitation. Anyone listening, jump into Discord. Thank you very much for your time today, Nick. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Gillian. Great chatting to you.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter @Irish_TechNews, on Facebook, facebook.com/IrishTechNews. On LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-tech-news. On Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie. And on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.